Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State Athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
Nation, what's happening, y'all? This is another episode of the Purple Project Podcast. This is episode 73. We are in December. Who could have thought about it, folks? Already December, the last month of the calendar year 2021. Eddie Greer, who lives in Manhattan, Kansas, here for the Purple Project Podcast, all about the latest around Kansas State athletics. There's so much going on. Obviously, before I bring on my co-host, Alex, the Purple Project Podcast, find it wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, Amazon, and a few more. The Purple Project Podcast entering the last month of the calendar year 2021. Before you know it, it's going to be 2022 already, and so much has gone on. Obviously, if you have not subscribe to the podcast, do that right now. I got the dailies going on, even though there was none today. There will be one up tomorrow. Volleyball is in the NCAA tournament. I'll go over the recent schedule for the rest of the week, among other sports. I do want to focus this episode in particularly on the football side and what took place in Texas in the future. Well, obviously, K-State's going bowling, and we know that. We don't know their destination until more than likely on Sunday evening sometime. So there's that as well. But obviously, K-State in the regular season with the loss on the road at Austin. So, and we're also recording this, obviously, just a little bit after. Again, I don't want to talk about this too much. Maybe next week after K-State takes on Wichita State on the basketball side. The men's team, led by Nigel Pack 17, takes down Albany after a very slow start in the game. So K-State turned on the Jets in the second half of the game tonight as we're recording this podcast on the 1st of December. So now Bruce Weber said in his little post-game interview there on ESPN Plus, Big 12 Network, and the ESPN Plus Network there, a little promo that we've been doing all year long. Bruce Weber, he's ready to go. He's fired up. He's ready to go to take on Wichita State. That game is going to be big for them. Let's go ahead and bring on the co-host for the weekly edition of the podcast, Alex, out there in San Diego. Alex, what's happening out there?
Not too much, Eddie. Not too much going on out here in San Diego. Hope all is well. Back there at the hat in the middle of Kansas. Eddie, I got to tell you, I was thinking this week. Okay, so I've been thinking. First off, I want to give kudos to the basketball team. We talked about their struggles in Kansas City. Two real tough games. They bounced back. They got two of their most impressive wins of the season, the two games following. Granted, not against good teams. Be very clear about that. They were not against good teams. K-State had stretches in both those games. They did not look good. So, not denying that at all. But to get a win by 28 points and then to get another win by 42 points, I believe it was, what was better than anything that we've seen from them in those past two games, despite the competition not being very high. So I do want to at least tip the cap to them. We'll get a lot better gauge on where they're at the next two games, because they're against Wichita State and Marquette, but we'll talk about that later. I was just thinking, Eddie, after the Texas game, and then with volleyball wrapping up, and if the women's team losing by 20-plus to NC State, the game was close for a while, it just kind of got me thinking, Eddie, and I was listening to Fitz, talking about kind of the state of the football program, and it just got me thinking, Eddie. I was like, you know, really, with all of K-State's athletic programs, a lot of them right now, you know, no one's just awful. Well, the basketball team was awful last year, but you know, no one's necessarily, like, awful, but everyone's just, like, kind of average right now. There's not a lot of excitement, in particular, around one particular program. I was just thinking, I can't remember a time in recent memory where K-State wasn't at least slightly, more than slightly above average in, like, one athletic program, and one whether it's football, whether it's women's basketball, men's basketball, volleyball, baseball, whether it's something. Usually they're at least really good at, like, one thing. And I was like, you know, man, I can't really think of anything. I mean, they're it feels like they're either average, slightly above average, or slightly below average in everything. And everything right now, and it just feels like there's not a lot of excitement. And that football game was kind of what got me thinking about Eddie, because we'll dive into it, but it bubbled up a lot of the problems that we knew were there. We knew were there with the football program, but I can really speak for myself, Eddie. I wasn't ready to face him yet because we had Skyler and we've won four in a row and we were feeling good. And you just was like, well, we're about that in the offseason. You know, we're playing good football now. But it kind of reared its ugly head on some of the problems the K-State's had of developing quarterbacks and just the lack of recruiting success and some of those different things. And then Fitz went into a deeper dive about those things. And it just kind of got me thinking about, there's just not, like I said, not a lot of excitement. You look at the football sales, you look at the basketball sales, you look at some of these sales, and something's got to change. I don't mean to be Mr. Dramatic here to start the podcast, but something is going to have to change. And it has me wondering if there might be something within the athletic department that is maybe, you know, part of it. That's definitely not a shot at Gene. I think Gene's a fine athletic director. But it just kind of has me wondering, you know, I heard somebody say, oh, man, maybe the K-State athletic department's in shambles. I don't think they're in shambles. No. I just don't know what they need to do, Eddie, to kind of change something. But something has to change. And I kind of got thinking about that when Fitz was talking about his football program. And he said something has to change. Climate has to change what he's doing and his way of implementing things, or he will fail. And he can succeed, but he will fail. And it got me just thinking more broad, just kind of about the athletic department in general, and kind of how I think that they kind of need to make some changes, you know, or things will fail. And, you know, the volleyball team, they lose those sets to KU to end. They go 6-10 in conference play, and they make the postseason, which is awesome. It's great. But you got a basketball program who hasn't made the NCAA tournament for a couple years now, and you got a football team that hasn't won more than 8 games since 2015 or 2014-2015 season, where they won 9, I believe.
I think 2014, yeah.
I don't know. These were just thoughts that have been going in the brain of Alex Ayton the last few days, as we've seen kind of the domino effect of the K-State-Texas game, and then the domino effect kind of the volleyball team and kind of their ramifications too. And so, anyway, I was just pondering and I was thinking about it. The football game kind of got me thinking about it a little more, but just interesting. It's just food for thought for people, food for thought. And you know, it definitely is not something we have to dive into right now, but I think it's something that, you know, over the coming months, you know, can be extracted. Because if you think about it, you know, they're just isn't a dominant program right now. There just isn't a ton of excitement around one program right now, and I'm just not sure what K-State needs to do to fix that. I don't think it's as easy as just, like, replacing Bruce Weber or replacing, you know, a coach or something like that. But just an interesting thought that I was pondering, Eddie. I thought I'd share it with you.
Oh, no, that's... No,
share with the listeners so they can kind of think about it, too.
Hey, you got to share. You got to share what's on your mind. Yeah, that's you brought back up something that on a previous episode on this podcast we kind of talked about. I think it was in the off season this past summer, anyways, about the state of these programs on where K-State's headed at, and you kind of brought up some good points back up there from that episode. I can't remember what it was, but I know we talked about the state of these programs. K-State for football, obviously, They finished 7-5. Again, had a golden opportunity to get to the 8-win mark, what you just talked about, but they stumble on their toes. Yet again, the offensive coaching staff stumble on their toes there against a 4-7 Texas team. I said it last week. I mean, there's no excuse for it. I mean, they made, again, we'll dive on into it here momentarily, but they just got for a second consecutive year, just got ran upon on the ground for whatever reason. K-State finished the conference in football 4-5. They finished fifth. They get a tiebreaker over West Virginia, but that's 4-5. You're one game under 500. So that, even though you finished fifth, which is a couple steps up than when you finished last year, still kind of felt what could have been 4-5. So you finished 7-5 overall. Again, more on that here later on here momentarily as this episode rolls on. You mentioned basketball. Yeah, basketball has struggled a little bit in this rebuild to get consistency from this from the guys. Obviously, tonight I'm thinking to myself, this is not good basketball. Watching this game, you're at one point at trailing the Great Danes of Albany by one, and then you use the second half from, obviously, the three-point ball from downtown was hot tonight. 10 connected from downtown, I believe, Nigel Pack. I don't have the stats up here right now. I didn't want to get in too much of basketball on this episode tonight. I think he hit either 4 or 5 more threes from downtown, at least. Obviously, you can correct me on that. Yeah, so K-State 4-2, I think now, heading into the game in a crucial game with Wichita State. And again, this kind of connects the dots on what you're talking about. I mean, K-State on the men's side, the women's side right now, they're taking teams. I know they got that huge game with South Carolina, but I thought they did pretty well. I mean, yes, they lost by 21, but they hung around with NC State. A couple of back quarters was the difference there for Jeff Mitty's team there. So they got a good little squad going over there right now, 7-1. They're going to take on the Goliaths of women's college basketball. That's South Carolina, Dawn Staley in that group. That is going to be a real, really test. I don't expect them to win, but I expect them to be competitive, at least just what they did against NC State, or at least close to that. But K-State women's basketball, at least, is starting off strong, a 7-1. We didn't see that from them last year. Baseball last year got gypped from getting into the tourney, or at least in the quote-unquote playoffs, if you will. On that note, Pete Hughes got that team. If there's a program really that's kind of heading in the right direction, I'd probably see more in baseball right now than in my opinion than even football or basketball right now. And there's a lot of questions surrounding this football team, kind of to bring it back to Case, Chris Klieman and his team losing on the road against a team that I had to agree with the Fox Sports crew, Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush. I don't know who said it, but the Texas is lacking talent on the offensive side of the ball, and K-State could not take advantage of it. They let another Robinson just run loose on it. Last year's Bijan Robinson, and yep. And it's here in a minute, I'll pull up the individual stats, but Roscoe Johnson. Another Johnson.
He had a day.
K-State made him look like an All-American once again there. And just bad offensive play calling, particularly in the second half of the game. I don't know what the offensive coaches were thinking, especially Courtney Messingham calling back-to-back Wildcat runs with Deuce Vaughn. And the short yardage game, that really frustrated me. You can't even pick up 1 yard. You can't pick up 1 yard. That That really irritated me. Rashawn Johnson, 179 yards, a touchdown on 31 carries in the game. Gotta be something there. Yes, the players did not lose this game, but defensively, there are a lot of missed tackles in the game there last week, in a critical missed opportunity to get 8 wins, like you just said. I mean, you had a golden opportunity to maybe improve your bowl standing a little bit, and that kind of takes a hit from there. And there's just so many questions right now surrounding, again, football, the moneymaker. Again, what you talked about just now, it's a top moneymaker here in the Little Apple, and kind of bringing back those conversations again, what we just had in the off season. By the way, we have not been paying attention. By now, K-State lost on the road to an unmanned Texas team, 22-17 on the road, which K-State led at the half in this game. K-State did not score a single point in the second half, which, oh, by the way, Bob Stoops of that same pregame show on Fox said, I think he said that Texas was outscored some wild number to the number.
It was big.
Yeah. it was big, and K-State couldn't even put a point on the board. Very disappointing. Yep. Very disappointing effort. Will Howard, while I'm on it, I'm just going to dive right on into the teeth. Why don't you hear? Let's see. Will Howard down here. Will Howard did have a run, though. Touchdown run in this game. 71 yards to the house on that Texas defense there. Will Howard, 9 of 13, only 65 yards, and he got sacked once in the game. Deuce Vaughn did continue to do Deuce Vaughn. You know you're going to get guaranteed Deuce Vaughn stuff. 143 yards and a touchdown for him, but he got stopped on critical plays, which I don't think Courtney Messingham was doing in the second half in this ball
Nor
game.
Nor do I, Eddie.
I don't understand it, and it comes circles back to him. I know me and a couple of my coworkers were talking about it on Monday. I can feel the frustration in them, and I'm sure K-State Nation feels the same. I mean, a missed opportunity on the road. KU went in there and beat them, and we can't even win. We can't even beat Texas. So I don't understand.
KU went in there, Eddie, and put up over 50 points.
I know. 50 points.
K-State put up 17.
And only 17 points. Come on. 17 points. And that's the disappointing part about it, that, you know, K-State had opportunities in the second half to... Well, for one, I mean, K-State's D slowed them down, but they couldn't get stops. They could not get stops when they needed to. They couldn't get off the field, and Texas was just bullying us on the ground. They had a game plan, apparently, to run the football, just what they did last year here in Manhattan, and they did what they needed to do. That's just plain and simple there. They just wanted to smash it down our throats, which they did for the second consecutive year. But in this one, K-State had every opportunity. They're in this game to win it, and they failed mightily in this one to get it done. I just don't know where to begin for this team. So now you're waiting to see where you go to a bowl game, but it's definitely frustrating the programs. Yes, since COVID came along, we haven't been able to go to a basketball game. Obviously with the whole mask thing and whatever, but you can't really get excited for that. And just looking at the basketball team tonight, even with a slow start, you know, I mean, K-State can go to Wichita and not only be competitive, but to beat a very good Wichita State team, that's one way to get the fan base excited for something, at least for something. And 100%. Yeah. And so for Kenny State on the football side, where all the attention really is on the football team and what's going to happen after, not even after the bowl season, we got news of a couple players that are transferring out and the bowl game hasn't even been announced.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, again, going back to one of the episodes last year about the transfer portal and guys just leaving. We had three guys leaving and the bowl game is not even announced. I was hot on one of the dailies that just recently came out. Again, if you're subscribed to the podcast, you can go back and download and check that out. I was pretty hot about that as well. Just why wait till after the bowl game to do that? I don't understand that either. I mean, you guys are going to a bowl, a thing that you did not do last year. So, I mean, if guys can't get ready, excited for a bowl game, what are we doing?
Yeah, it seems like bowl games have lost a lot of the luster to them, which sucks. I'm just going to be honest. It sucks. You see players that sit out now. You know, oh, I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to hurt my NFL draft stock, so I'm not going to play the bowl game. Or, oh, you know, I'm going to enter the transfer portal now so I can get a head start on, you know, trying to, you know, find my school. Maybe I'll find it before the new early signing period, which is another horrible idea that the NCAA implemented, because now coaches are scrambling around trying to get 80% of their class signed even before a bowl game. It's ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. And to be 100% honest, I mean, the NCAA is who's to blame for most of this, because they created this transfer portal that you can just transfer in and out whenever the hell you want, and they're the ones who moved the early recruiting up to where, you know, everybody's trying to scramble and get it done before bowl games, and then, which is now forcing coaches out before bowl games because they want to get into their new schools and get recruiting classes before. So it's just a whole domino effect. But I'll tell you this. In regards to K-State, there's a couple conversations that need to be had. The first is about the game. The second is about kind of a bigger picture of the football program. And I'm going to do my best right now to just stick football. Just stick Texas, K-State, Texas, and not veer off into the bigger picture, because that's where I want to veer. Naturally, I just want to go that direction. And I might a little bit, but I'm trying not to too much. I'm going to try to stick first here. I'm going to just try to stick to the team, or to the game, and then I can, you know, we can talk about the kind of a bigger picture after that. But
that's fine. That's fine.
In regards to this game, Eddie, I think first off, I do want to, despite the defense giving up what 180 yards to Rashawn Johnson, I think it was, or 179, something like that.
No, it's 179. Yeah.
Despite how ridiculous that is, I do want to give Joe Klatterman credit. I want to give him credit because I think he's done a real nice job on the back half of the season with this team. We saw the defense really kind of come out guns blazing there in the first few games of the season. And it looked really good in that new 3-3-5 defense. And then everything fell apart. And they had just a horrible three-game stretch. I mean, they looked awful against Oklahoma State. They looked awful against Oklahoma. They looked awful against Iowa State. I mean, they just looked horrible. Horrible in those three games. And you're thinking, okay, like, here we go. Credit to Joe Klatterman. You know, he was able to turn that thing around. Now, they didn't look very good in the first half against Texas Tech either, defensively. But from the second half of that Texas Tech game on, through the rest of the season, I thought that defense looked much, much, much better. And the problem that they had against Baylor and Texas was that they couldn't get off the field. They couldn't get, and Chris Conner talked about it in both games, they couldn't get off the field. They allowed drives to go on and on and on and on. And they lost that possession. The opponent ended up with a lot more plays. And that's just not a formula to win. But they were getting stops. They got stops against Baylor. They got stops against Texas. And while there might have been a couple ugly stat lines in there, the defense did what they still did what they had to do in those two games. Someone says, oh, we're going to hold Texas to 22 points. You know, we're going to hold Baylor to 20 points. I mean, you take that. You take that every day of the week in the Big 12. You know, the defense did what they needed to do. I thought Joe Klinerman did a really nice job rebounding with that defense. And doing a good job maximizing them. I think it was definitely a better defense this year than we saw the year prior. And I don't know if you remember, Eddie, but coming into the season, I was telling you about some anonymous quotes, or some quotes from some anonymous coaches prior to the season. And in regards to K-State, they all just talked about how predictable K-State was on defense. And I thought K-State kind of got away from them a little bit this year. I thought they were a little more unpredictable on defense. I thought they kind of had a little more resistance there. So I definitely want to give credit where it's due there. Offensively, oh boy. So I'm with you, Eddie. I believe that the play calling on third and one and fourth and one on two different occasions was pretty awful. You've got four different plays where you need a yard, and you can't get a yard on one of those plays. And it was not because of, you know, K-State just lost at the line. Granted, they did lose at the line of scrimmage there on some of those plays, but the play calls were just set up for failure. You know, you throw in there a small running back in the Wildcat who has no threat of throwing the football. You know, Texas is loaded the box with 9 guys. You know, you got single coverage everywhere. You know, no safeties back. I mean, that's not going to be a successful play. You know, Deuce Vaughn comes out after the game and says, yeah, you know, I mean, you know, we don't have the option to audible out of the play. You know, what's called is called. And so, I mean, nothing he can do. He's looking at a 10-man box and he has to snap and just run into a million guys. I mean, that is the epitome of coaching failure. That is the epitome, Eddie, of putting players in a position to fail. Not succeed, to fail. And that is the complete incompetency of the offensive coordinator of this football team, which unfortunately I believe he's going to be back next year. And fine, Chris Kleiman, do that at your own risk. Because, okay, I'm going to try not to go too far, big picture here. But do it at your own risk, Coach Kleiman, because if you bring him back, your ass might be on a hot seat next year. It just might, because it's a big, big season for him next year. And like I said, we can get into that a little later. But back to this game. This is incompetency to have your running back, who's not very big, just running into these stacked boxes out of a Wildcat. I mean, it's just horrible. You've got a quarterback that is 275 pounds. You don't think that you can QB sneak him? I mean, you really don't think you can get over the pile? That's just ridiculous. It's utterly, utterly ridiculous. Bill Snyder had to be rolling over in his living room, watching K-State, trying to do that on third and one, fourth and one. A guy who used to line up these, like, wishbone formations on these goal line stances and just QB sneak it every time.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't. And look, I'm not saying I agreed with everything Bill Snyder did offensively, because I didn't.
Right, yeah.
Don't overthink it. You've got a 275-pound quarterback. You know, just sneak it. Like, just sneak it. And why are you running 6 yards instead of 1 yard? If you've got third and one, don't have a running back out of the shotgun. That's 5 more yards he has to run. It just didn't make sense to me. Again, I think it was just apparent, too, in the game. K-State just, Will Howard just, he can't not throw the football. And,
no.
And I shouldn't say he can't throw the football. He can throw the football. He cannot consistently.
He cannot consistently
throw the football. And I just don't understand the people who think, oh, he's going to be a beast. Oh, he's got it. I have seen nothing. Mm. Nothing. And this is no offense to Will Howard. He's a good kid. He is definitely a good kid. But he has not shown me anything that makes me think, oh yeah. He's their guy. He's their future QB. He's not showing me anything. He's not showing me anything to resemble that. He cannot throw the ball like a Division I quarterback right now. He just can't, and that's not at fault to him, but he can't. And so, once again, bigger picture. We can look at that a little later. on the quarterback thing, but he clearly is not developed where I believe he needed to be, and it really made K-State one-dimensional what they could do offensively. It did take part of the playbook away from Courtney Messingham. I'll give him that. He was definitely working on a limited playbook. But with that said, it was predictable. It was easy. They made it real easy on Texas. And what was frustrating, Eddie, is that there were plays to be had out there. There were plays to be had for K-State offensively. Texas was giving them some things, and they just weren't taking advantage of it. And you can't do that. You can't do that. So offensively, it was a really disappointing day. Deuce did have a good game. 24 carries, 143 yards. He had a touchdown in there.
Yep.
Will did have the big run. Give him credit on that, too. And so he did have that play. So K-State had their moments offensively, but it was definitely nowhere where it needed to be, primarily because they just couldn't pass the ball well enough to where Texas could actually respect it. And the loss of Skyler was just enormous. It was just a glaring weakness. And just kind of prove that K-State doesn't have the depth and talent around the quarterback and that offense to make up for losing a guy like Skyler. And so, the good news for K-State is Skyler will probably be back for the bowl game. So, I mean, that's good. But it still wasn't pretty an offense. It was a game K-State should have won. There's no doubt about that. They're the better football team. They just played like crap. I mean, just call what it is. They played like crap. They lost the game. Good teams don't lose games like that, Eddie. You are 100% right. Right, spot on. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating to end a season like that, especially when you were playing good football. You won four in a row. You lost a tough one against Baylor, but I think that you still a respectable loss. But then to go out and play like that, against Texas and end a year like that, it's just not what the K-State football program needed. It's not what anyone needed. So it's back to the drawing board for the Cats, and they got to get ready for a bowl game now. And I do still think they're going to end up in a pretty good bowl. When you look at kind of the way things break down, if Oklahoma State does find a way to get into the College Football Playoff, the Big 12 could get a couple more teams in New Year's Six bowls, and all of a sudden K-State's bumped up. They're pretty high in the bowl pecking order, and so they could end up in Orlando potentially.
Potentially, and yeah.
Yeah, they could end up out there and play in the Cheez-It Bowl, I believe is what it's called now. gotta love the bowl names now, and you gotta love them. But I mean, hell, they can end up playing against Clemson out there. If you get that matchup, Eddie, that will drum up some attention.
That would.
But I think that there's still some. I still think that there's some intriguing football to play. There's no doubt about that. But you can turn it around. You can get a big win against Bulk. Let's just say hypothetically, Eddie. Let's just say it. And who knows what'll happen or not. But hypothetically, K-State plays Clemson and the Cheez-It Bowl. And K-State beats them. Oh my gosh, K-State beats Clemson. Of course that would make us feel better going into the offseason. Duh.
And that'll jump some sales.
Of course we'd feel better. I mean, no crap we'd feel better. That feeling can kind of be washed away a little bit, but still, you just got kind of that bad taste in your mouth in that Texas game, and look, I'll just end up by saying, John Kurtz kind of said this on his podcast after, or his YouTube after. It might be a good thing long term for K-State to lose that Texas game, because it exposed some things that could have been kind of masked over if you just kept winning. And it was not an excuse to say, hey, I want K-State to lose. No, that's not all he's saying. He was saying, you never know, it could be a blessing in disguise, because you can't ignore some of the things that happened in that Texas game. I mean, some things were just exposed too much, where you can't just turn around and act like it's not there, because everyone sees it. And so, you never know, but just an ugly game overall.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
That will get some of the if. I mean, going back to what you brought up in the top of the episode, Alex, if that were to happen, miraculously beat K-State, face Clemson in Orlando. We're just going to roll that example. That'll get the fan base something to be pumped up about in the offseason. I mean, you want that excitement, there you go. That would be the perfect scenario there. Obviously, Clemson, a little bit of a down year this year. they're not going to the ACC championship game. Oh, by the way, this is championship week, by the way. And K-State, who put up a good battle against Baylor here in Manhattan. Baylor, Oklahoma State for the Big 12 championship. With, of course, the college football playoff on the line, possibly, for Oklahoma State or Baylor, for that matter. So these two teams met early on in the year. Which Oklahoma State did win the game in a close battle, and I suspect the same thing as well in this one. It's going to be a very good football game. But back to K-State, obviously Texas showed a lot of glaring holes that in that performance there as well. So, and again, tying it all back to what you said at the top, you mean, where's the excitement for any of these programs? K-State, obviously, if they go to Orlando, if they go to San Antonio and win their bowl game, maybe that will give some life to this fan base here and everywhere, if you're a K-State fan or a K-State alumni, folks, about this football team. This is the third year of the Chris Klieman era, and we've seen after the overachieving 8-4 first year, last year obviously very disappointing, 4-6, and now you're 7-5. You're back in the postseason. We don't know at this time, obviously. We will definitely know on Sunday night where K-State's headed for the bowl game, and we'll talk a lot about that in the upcoming episodes of Triple P. But if you lose the bowl game, then you have, once again, going in the offseason, have more questions. We're having a mediocre year again and whatnot, and the recruiting hasn't been very good. And that's been a topic, been a discussion here on the podcast. Keenan's been bringing it up on Twitter. I came across one of his tweets earlier. Or it was earlier today at some point in the afternoon about Manhattan and getting guys here. I mean, once they get here to Manhattan, you hear the stories that they love it here. It just transforms them. So, I mean, obviously, I'm getting all over a dartboard again, but again, it goes back to being, obviously, winning football games and beating a 4-7 team, beating that type of team goes a long way. Being the teams that you're supposed to be. You hear the old saying that you're supposed to beat the bad teams, right? Yep. So if you don't beat the bad teams, then the fan base is pissed. They're kind of lackadaisical. What's going on? They want to find out questions. What's going on? They start to ask questions, start to bring up a whole bunch of can of worms on a program, whether it's K-State, OU, or not. And a lot's happened over this past week, obviously, Oklahoma's stance anyways. But, so K-State finished fifth in the Big 12 in the regular season at 4-5. Again, that when you look at that on paper, that doesn't get you excited, but hey, it's better. Well, actually, when I come to think about it, they finished 4-6 last year. You're under 500 in the conference, which you missed opportunity with Texas. You obviously a missed opportunity, and who knows if Skyler's on the field against Oklahoma State. They're in that ball game early on in the year. Who knows? Who knows? So,
that is when Oklahoma State was most vulnerable.
Yep, Oklahoma State was not playing their best football in the beginning of the year. And now look at Oklahoma State where they are now. They're playing at the best football at the right time and knocking on the door, trying to get in that college football playoffs, so they were not playing their best football. And KZ had an opportunity to go in there, upset them, and they missed opportunity. They got off to a slow start, making mistakes. You can't do that on the road. So, Baylor, you can't give the backup quarterback all day to throw the football. I mean, it goes back to what you're saying. You can't. You got to get off the field on third down. They may shape and look at an actual starting quarterback back there. That's a tough one to swallow right there. Iowa State can't come in the game. Lackadaisical. Breece Hall. Touchdown. Long-ass touchdown run to begin the game. At home. You can't do that. So I can go down here, down the line here. Obviously, you know, the defense really turned around. You brought up Joe Klaiman. He's done a wonderful job with that defense in the second half of the season there. And obviously the turning point, Felix Anduke-Uzomah, the safety at Texas, really turned that around. If that play does not happen, we might be talking about something else. So
completely different season. We could be talking about a completely different outlook right now, Eddie.
Yep, so yeah, Felix Anduke's play has been really good. Daniel Green, 11 tackles to lead the team against Texas. You know what you're going to get out of him. Let's see. Julius Brents, 8 tackles against Texas. Ross Elders had a couple big games on the defensive side.
Great game against Baylor, by the way.
Yes, he did. Yep, 7 tackles against Texas. Cody Fletcher and Reggie Stubblefield both had 5 tackles. And this is a defense that did not have Jerron McPherson on the field. T.J. Smith had 4 tackles along with Jalen Pickle up front as well. So this defense has had, has made strides in the second half of the year, but it's the offense, once again, that's kind of slowing them down there. So, I mean, with the lack of weapons or lack of talent, or whatever you want to call it, they're just not getting enough production on the offensive side of the ball. And now you have, depending on what day this bowl game is, you have a couple weeks to get yourself right or do something, to get yourself ready. I mean, there's no excuse. You have plenty of time to get yourself ready to go. There should be really no excuse. I mean, these guys missed out on the bowl game last year. Well, you say they should have been in the bowl game last year. but these same guys, for the exception of the transfers that came into K-State, like Reggie Stubblefield and Julius Brents, they missed out on the bowl game last year. So these guys should be pumped up for a bowl game. No, there's no question about that. So if you're not ready for a pumped up for a bowl game, you shouldn't be suiting up for Kansas State. There's just no excuse whatsoever. So you're talking about being excited. It all comes back around to this point that you brought up. Yes, we lost to Texas. I mean, as disappointed it is, I mean, it's now in the rearview mirror, right? So now you look forward to the selection, where you're going to go to represent the Big 12 in this bowl game, whether it's in Orlando, Texas, or whatever it is, and you have an opportunity to end the season with a victory. That's what you should be getting excited about. So if you guys excited about something, get behind this team. And this team right here has an opportunity to get 8 wins for the second time in Coach Chris Klieman's era here at K-State. There's no question about that. So you can't get excited for it.
That's nothing to scoff at when they game. See that in Power 5 football.
No, it's not. So, I mean, as much as it is for a missed opportunity in Austin, well, you know, you got to lick your wounds and figure out a way to get back off the mat. And whoever it is you're playing, get pumped up for that game. And of course, we're going to talk about it, whichever team they're playing, whatever bowl they're playing.
I'll say this, Eddie, too. And I mean, kick off, but
go ahead.
I pulled up. I was looking, doing a little digging, kind of some bowl projections once we kind of started down that. And I found 5 in an article here from this week. And so Stuart Mandel of The Athletic, he predicts K-State at the Cheez-It Bowl playing Clemson, so he must have been thinking like me. He was thinking like me. K-State also got projected to play in the Cheez-It Bowl by 24/7 Sports. They had K-State against NC State, who is not Clemson, but is a top 20.
They are a top 20 team. Yep.
They are a top 20 team. And then the three others, CBS, ESPN, and Pro Football Network, they all had K-State in the Texas Bowl. And two of them had K-State playing Mississippi State, and one of them had them playing Auburn. So these are not boring matchups. If they get one of these matchups, Eddie, that's a matchup that you can use that. If you can win, if you can beat Clemson or Mississippi State or Auburn, you know, or heck, even a top 20 NC State, if you can beat a team like that, that can absolutely be a springboard into the offseason. And if you can say you want a bowl like the Cheez-It Bowl, as dumb as it sounds, people know what that bowl is. It's still a good bowl. And the Texas Bowl is obviously a very well-respected bowl as well. If you can play one of those bowls and win one of those bowls and beat a team like that, that absolutely can catapult you. There's no doubt about it. And it absolutely can give you a good injection of juice and energy and enthusiasm. Would it be easy? No, of course it wouldn't be easy. Would K-State be the underdog in pretty much every single game I just named? Probably. But still, the point is, as you mentioned, Eddie, there is still some meat on the bone there. You know, as dire as things seem right now, and as much as we should be discussing some other things, it is still an accomplishment to win 8 in 2 years. You know, we only won 4 last year. Chris Kleiman did have a better season. And to be 100% honest, he did about what I was hoping he would do, to be quite frank. And K-State's put themselves in a position to play in a good bowl game. And, you know, last time that they went bowling with him was a Liberty Bowl. And it would appear this year they're probably going to be able to play in a better bowl. I did see one person that projected K-State's playing the Liberty Bowl. That's probably the one thing that would make fans go, come on, man.
Why, yeah, man? that would be
not what I want to see.
That's not what I want to see. No.
No, I don't want to see that either. But look, if they're in it, I'll watch, but I hope they're not. So point being is, as you mentioned, Eddie, it's dire things to see. Yeah, there's still stuff on the table for K-State, and you still got a marquee matchup coming up, likely. And that can serve as a kind of springboard. As dire as these things seem. As dire as the Texas game seems, as dire as the offensive coordinator thing seems, and what the hell is K-State going to do a quarterback next year, and how are they going to replace 3 starting linemen? And I mean, those are all things that need to be discussed. But this bowl game is still a big deal, and people shouldn't act like it's not, you know, because it is. You know, it's an honor to be able to play in a bowl game, and if you can play against a team like that in a match that we typically wouldn't see. That's a great opportunity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I'm looking up here, pulled up CBSSports.com. I'll do some more digging up until the actual bowl selection. But yeah, you mentioned Mississippi State. That's a team that K-State's familiar with, K-State beat Mississippi State in Starkville.
The coach of Mississippi State is now, Eddie.
Yeah. Good old Mike Leach. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Former Texas Tech product.
Texas Tech, who's familiar with K-State. Yes, sir. Yep. That's one of the projections you just said. That's an SC opponent there, which the last time they met, I just mentioned, K-State went in there to win under a different coaching staff. Now that Mike Leach is taking over, you mentioned Auburn taking Alabama to the limit last week. And that's another team K-State's familiar with back a few years ago. That big matchup here in the Little Apple.
Yes.
And we knew how that went. Unfortunately.
I was there, Eddie.
Unfortunately, there was so much excitement. I remember. Much excitement about that. The atmosphere, the electricity. And yeah, we gave that one away. A lot of mistakes.
That excitement, Eddie. That game had that excitement that I'm talking about that's missing. There were 2 K-State games in my time at K-State where you could feel that type of energy. You had it against Texas when K-State was playing for the Big 12 championship.
Yep, I was there, and,
yep. You were there, for that. I was there for that. And then you felt it in that K-State-Auburn game. That was one of those games where as a student, you had to get there 3 hours early to get in your spot, to be able to get a good spot. And it was that game where I had friends hitting me up, Eddie, who aren't even K-State fans, saying, hey, can I go out for the weekend? And, you know, maybe I'll just get a ticket and go to the game. Like, people knew that K-State was playing against Auburn. People wanted to see it. And so that's my point right there. Maybe playing Auburn in a bowl game would help kind of spur some of that, Eddie. You never know.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Alex Aiden, Eddie here. This is the Purple Project Podcast. I want to say it again in my other podcast. There, I caught myself there. This is the Purple Project Podcast, episode 73. The first day in December. December 1st, 2021, as we're recording this podcast now here, as we're kind of recapping the K-State season on the football side here tonight on this edition of the Purple Project Podcast. Yeah, and that Clemson, if that were to come up, like we've been talking about, that Clemson K-State, yeah, that will definitely perk up some ears around here.
I want it.
So,
when will we see Clemson and K-State play again? Of course, we'll see if we make the playoff. I should have known. Yeah.
That's going to be quite a while for K-State. I brought up recruiting. Yeah, they're going to need a lot, especially, that's going to be another whole podcast, recruiting. I mean, we talk about it pretty much all year. It showed in that Texas game, not having a decent backup there. Whether it was Will Howard or Jaren Lewis, they would have had their struggles against an undermanned Texas defense there. But yeah, if it were Clemson, K-State, that would be something. That would be something right there. So, I mean, again.
You know, Eddie, I just want to say with recruited too, K-State did just have not recruited the way they – I don't think Chris Kleiman and his staff have – I just don't think they've recruited the way they thought they were going to be able to.
No.
I really just don't. I think that they've just kind of fallen short of their expectations. Maybe they didn't realize how difficult it would be to recruit a guy to Manhattan, or guy or girl, you know, depending on the sport. I just don't think they've recruited to the level that they expected.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and I actually got – I was on board with this coaching staff, even with obviously the holdover Taylor Bratt. They were talking about trying to get – obviously, you have to win the state. That's number one, obviously. And the way that KU is playing, yes, they still have a losing record and everything, but they've taken a couple of steps forward in being a lot more competitive this year under Lance Leipold this year, taking some teams to the limit. Obviously, we already talked about KU, his team going to Texas, beating – Texas, that while we couldn't do that, taking TCU to the limit there, even taking Oklahoma to the brink early this year as well. So that team, yes, they're what 2-10 on the year, but they taking some steps forward in their progression. So we got to give kudos to where it needs to be, at least for KU, at least, but for us there. Still, though, you got to win the state. And going back to my recruiting line, I was excited that this team was really excited about going to Kansas City and all these high schools and doing all their recruiting thing. But, yeah, it seems to me like they're taking a couple steps back in recruiting as well. So I don't know what they need to do. On that side, they said like every coach needs to learn to recruit. Well, I don't think they might need to go back to the drawing board on that and to figure something else out, because obviously So with Scott, obviously the big fish, Skylar Thompson, after this bowl game, will not be coming back for seventh year. Somebody brought that up at my work.
Can you imagine? Seventh year. Brandon Wheaton at Oklahoma State.
We don't need another one of those guys, but no offense to Skylar Thompson. He's done his share here in Kansas State. He has given up. He's done everything.
His body is showing it, too.
Yeah, he's done everything at K-State, so Skyler, he needs, after this game, hopefully on a good note, go do his thing in the world, wherever he's going to do. But the thing is, you got to have a quarterback. And I've said this all year long. You don't have a quarterback, you're in trouble. So obviously the transfer portal, John Kurtz mentioned it. I'm sure Fritz has mentioned it. Everybody's mentioning it here. You gotta go get one. Or I thought about this, actually. So here's what I've been thinking about between Texas and now, here tonight on the podcast, Alex. So Jay Grubly, right? You recruited him, a four-star, right? Why are you not developing him? I mean, yes, he's not getting on the field this year, but why isn't he, why did you guys, the coaching staff, developing him in practice or getting some more live looks? I mean, you kind of said that last week or tweeted it out, or one of the two, saying that, hey, I mean, give it a shot. You have nothing to lose. Put him out there. But he's a four-star, right? One of the top quarterbacks in the Midwest, why aren't we develop him to get him where he needs to be? I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of thinking about that. I mean, you recruited a quarterback to take over, possibly take over for next year, and that quarterback room is kind of crowded right now. And depending on what K-State does with this position, whether they actually do get one in the transfer portal, or recruit one, or try to develop, either generally continue to develop Lewis and Rubley, or even I'll just throw in Will Howard in there also for kicks and giggles. I'm just kind of shocked that you go out and recruit this four-star. Next year's next spring ball, I'm going to say it's going to be really interesting. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if Rubley transfer out, then you're really in trouble. So he's a top quarterback for a reason. He came to K-State for a reason. So I don't know we're not close to the team, obviously. Well, at least living here anyways, I'm not close to the team like I used to be. But, not trying to get him more reps in practice or whatnot, that's a little concerning. And way his transfer portal is working out, again, all this is connecting here. Losing Joel Irvin, that's a big loss there. Let's see, Tyrone Howell not being used correctly. He's out. And Jerkader Wright, he's gone. That's two-thirds of your backfield.
Yeah.
In your running back stable. So you got nobody, unless I'm forgetting somebody right now. I have the running backs pulled up in front of my screen right now, but that's big.
That's two of your three heads there, the top three, and the kind of three-headed monster was really a two-headed monster.
Joe Irvin was getting on the field a lot. He was he was a real factor on the field, and that was a shocker to me. I said it in the daily. I'll say it here tonight. That was a real shocker to me. Tyrone Howell, not that much. Jarquita Wright, that was a surprise to me at all, given his situation. But Joe Irvin, that really surprised me. Those two, really, Deuce Vaughn and Joe Irvin, really complimented each other. And I'm sad to see Joe Irvin going to the transfer portal.
Perfect time for me to kind of dive into my deeper stuff a little bit here. Right? So thank you for that. I'll say this.
Oh, you're welcome.
I completely opposite thought of you with Joe Irvin after Katie Wright. Joe Irvin and Tyrone Howell. I wasn't surprised to see Joe Irvin hit the transfer portal. I was a little more surprised by Tyrone Howell. The way is, well, first off, I heard Fitz on Saturday, I think it was, say, don't be surprised if Joe Urban hits the transfer portal. I thought, okay, if he's saying that, he's probably going to transferring. But even before that, I was like, I get it, because Joe Irvin's had a great year. You just mentioned it. He's had a great year behind Deuce. They've been a great 1-2 combo. I think Joe Irvin outplayed his role. I think that he played so well as a compliment back to Deuce that he can go to another legit D1 school and be a top running back.
Yeah, I mean, start.
I think he may have realized, I can go somewhere and be the guy, and I'm not going to be the guy here because there's Deuce. Deuce is going to be in front of me.
Yep.
And so, I don't know, when I thought about it like that, I was like, okay, when I first heard it from Fitz, I was like, whoa, what? No. But then the more I thought about it like that, that does make sense. John Howell is more of a, I shouldn't actually say that surprised me, because it didn't really surprise me, because I know K-State wasn't using him the way that he needed to be used. But, I just didn't think, it was his first year in the offense, and, I thought maybe it was a full offseason, and coming back next year after having a full offseason, because he did not have a full offseason this last year. Remember, he came in late. So I thought, I think that he can have a lot more of an impact in that second season with the Cats, and, so to see him bail was frustrating. And a little bit surprising for that reason. But at the same time, as I tweeted, Eddie, they had to use him right. So what do you expect? You've got a receiver who, and guess what, Eddie? He liked my tweet that said he wasn't used right. So clearly he agrees. So he liked it. He literally liked that tweet where I said he wasn't used correctly. So the thing is, if you're not going to use a guy correctly, he's not going to hang around. This is part of the deal with Porter. When you're not using your wide receivers, and I'll go a step further. I don't think they used Malik Knowles correctly this year. I don't think they used Darren Howell correctly this year. The receiver that I think they did the best job of utilizing was Phillip Brooks. I thought that he was the one that they did the best job of utilizing a skill set. But I really think they left a lot out there with Malik Knowles, left a lot out there with Tyron Howell.
I think that, like, I'd go a step, I'm starting to jump in here.
Go ahead.
I'll take even a step further than that. And I said it here all year in the podcast. I don't think they used David Matabebe right.
Oh, 100%. 100%. You've got an offense that is based on tight end sets. And you have got a grown man out there in Matabebe who's averaging like over 30 yards a catch, and you can't get him the football. It just amazes me. Against Texas, you can't get him the football? Really? When you're struggling offensively, you can't get that guy the football. Will Howard can't get him the ball. Get him in open space, with his size and athleticism. Perfect example, Eddie. Did not use him correctly, one bit. And it's frustrating, and I get it. Look, he battled injuries. He wasn't healthy for a good chunk of the year. All true. But with that said, it's just a misuse. Just a misuse. Misuse of a talented transfer. And that's a problem. That's a problem. That's a problem with the office of coaching that's going on. And I know that Chris Kleiman did say to Wyatt and Stan after the game and his post-game interview with them that he needs to get more involved with the offense. The truth of the matter is that he shouldn't have to get more involved with the offense. He should have an offensive coaching staff that's competent and can do their job, and put players in the right position. He shouldn't have to. He shouldn't have to, go babysit Courtney Massingham. I mean, it just shouldn't have to happen. And so you've got coaches, Eddie, that are dedicated to tight ends and fullbacks. I mean, why the hell do you have coaches that are dedicated to tight ends?
And you may change. Sorry, again, you made changes. You made changes in the offseason. Obviously, with Courtney Messingham, maybe he stretched too thin with his offensive play calling. He's got moved. He got, I guess, promoted with the wide receivers. And the other coach, I can't think of his name right now. Jason Ray, who was with the wide receiver coach a year ago, got transferred to the fullbacks.
Yeah, fullbacks and tight ends. And you've got a coach that's dedicated just to fullbacks and tight ends, but you're not using them. Like, what the hell is the point of the coach if you're not going to use the player? It baffles my mind. Why is our coach and the coach's staff now you're going to use the player? Oh, my gosh. It makes no sense. It makes no sense. And it's just frustrating, Eddie, because K-State has talent on their offense. That's what's maddening. It's like, oh, my God. You had a competent offensive line. You've got one of the best running backs in the country on your team. He's an all-pro guy. He's the complete deal. You've got Malik Knowles. You've got Tyron Howell. You've got Phillip Brooks. You've got Kate Warner there, who made some plays for K-State. You've got Mater Bebe there at tight end. You got Leonard, who's a good block at tight end. You've got a six-year senior quarterback. You can't put that together for more than an offense that was like statistically ninth in the Big 12. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I understand that, K-State's got a system and they're running the system and this and that. But I think K-State needs to go back and reevaluate the system, Eddie.
You need to do something.
Tim Fitzgerald may as well just be the sponsor of this podcast, because I'm gonna say something else he said. He said it, and I agree with it. It's not a bad offensive concept that K-State has. It's not a bad concept. Their application of the concept is way off. And I agree 100%. I don't think it's a bad concept. I don't think it's a bad concept at all. It's a concept that can win when you're less talented than other teams. 100%. You're trying to run the ball. You're trying to do those tight end sets. You're trying to control the clock. You're trying to do those things. Sort of what Bill Snyder did. That is successful. But Chris Klieman and Courtney Messingham's application of that system is what is getting all thrown off. And I've seen some people say, well, you look at Will Howard. I mean, Colin Klein wasn't an accurate thrower either. And I'm like, how are people even trying to justify Will Howard compared to Colin Klein? Like, Colin Klein developed. Look, was he ever a great quarterback to throw on the football? No.
No, he wasn't.
But did he develop over his time at K-State? Oh, my gosh.
He did.
Yes. His first year at K-State, he couldn't throw the ball. No,
yeah, he couldn't even throw the football. No.
He couldn't throw the football. His second year, he was even better. And then his third year, he was even better. And he actually was a decent passer. His game evolved, and he got better each year. And he turned into a very feared Big 12 quarterback because, number one, he was used correctly. And number two, he was developed by the coaching staff. The quarterbacks aren't being used correctly, and they're not being developed. And that's what doesn't make any sense. So, big picture, K-State's got a problem. They've got a problem there offensively. They're not developing quarterbacks. They're not recruiting to the level that they need to be recruiting. And I don't think they're doing a good enough job of utilizing the transfer portal, which I believe can be a benefit to them. I really do. I've said that from the get-go. I think that this can be good for a school like K-State. They can go snag a disgruntled or a player from a big-time school, or they can go get a high recruit who may not be getting a lot of playing time. I mean, they may be able to snag a player they could recruit in the transfer portal and infuse some talent, infuse some depth. But they don't have enough resources dedicated to it. They're not using it properly enough, and they just seem a little out of touch with kind of what's going on in that recruiting landscape and transfer landscape to me from my lens, and it's not good enough. And Kansas State, you can't succeed like that, and especially when you're running an offense that is so predictable. And I'm not going to say Courtney Messingham was a horrible offensive coordinator all year. No, he wasn't. But it wasn't good enough. It wasn't good enough. That's what it comes down to. I mean, no. He's not the worst offensive coordinator in the world. But can K-State do better? Yes. Do they need to do better? Yes,
yeah.
They do. They need to do better. Or their ceiling is going to be 7-5. And look, do I have a problem with K-State going 7-5? No, I don't. There's going to be years where you go 7-5, 6-6, heck, even 5-7. It's going to happen. I understand that. But you're not going to get that excitement out of the football program. You're going to be seeing more open seats at the stadium and a lack of excitement if your ceiling is 7-5 and you don't have the threat of being able to have a 9-10 win season. You know, you don't have the threat of being able to have a season like Oklahoma State's having this year and put yourself in a position to potentially play in the playoff when it's expanded, hopefully when it's expanded to 12 teams, and the Big 12 winner could get into the playoff. If that ends up indeed happening, I mean, if you're K-State, you're really going to just cap your ceiling at 7-8 wins and you're not even going to have the threat of being able to have a season where you can make a run at that thing like you used to be able to. So, I mean, that's the problem with what they're doing right now. And going into next year, Eddie, to finish up Rooley and to go all with that full circle, I know I heard some K-State reporters talking about how, you know, he obviously got in late, as we know. I heard some say that he was overranked, they thought, a little bit. And that might have been part of the reason why he got overhyped. He obviously had some injuries, and that kind of set him back, too. And he just never was able to really get his footing this year. And so, you know, we'll see what he does this offseason. But he just never was able to get the reps, never able to get the footing, never able to get those things because of coming in late, not being able to get enough practices, getting hurt, all these different hurdles. I get it, Eddie, and I get it, and I totally get it. And I admitted it on our last podcast. I threw the question out there to people, but I wouldn't have started him. But I was curious what people thought. With that said, though, this kind of gets back, though, to K-State's point. Yeah, yes, there were reasons why Rooley didn't develop this year. But once again, it's another quarterback that's not developing under the coaching staff. That's the bigger problem. They can't. They're in year three, Eddie. They've gone through 3 years. They're yet to develop a quarterback. They're yet to develop one. They've been coaching for 3 years now at K-State. They've not developed their own quarterback once.
Nope.
And Keith and I butted heads a little bit on Twitter about this. Because he was like, they developed Skylar Thompson. They did develop Skylar Thompson. They made him better. 100%. But they haven't developed their guy. They haven't
their guy, their yes. Guy that, and yep, developed yep, their guy. Yep, their guy.
And
yep.
That's a problem. That's a problem. You've got to be able to develop a guy. You've been coaching. You've been here for 3 years. So that's a problem. I don't know what else to say. They have to go into the portal, Eddie. They have to go into the portal this offseason. They have to get a quarterback. Or you're looking at a team that I'm sorry, Eddie. It's a team that I think will win 5-6 games with the current quarterback situation. I really do. I think it's a team that would take a step back from what they did this year, and they'd be a fringe bowl team. Like, it would be, they'd be on the cusp. They kind of have that, 6-6, 5-7. If things break right, maybe 7-5. If things break wrong, 4-8. I mean, that's what I think they're maybe looking at if they have to run out Will Howard, who I think it would be, because I don't think Jake Rubel would be ready. And so, but if you can get a quarterback, K-State's got talent. Like, Daniel Green said it. He said, I'm not going to the NFL draft. I'm coming back. I have unfinished business. You've got a guy like Daniel Green coming back. You're going to be able to get some guys in the portal. I think that they will be able to still. And you're going to have Clay Duke back with NGK Uzama.
Yep.
That's going to be a great 1-2 punch. Deuce is going to have another year under his belt. Like, you're going to have pieces there. So, K-State can do some big things next year, but they cannot do it with the quarterback situation.
What they've been doing. They can't do it.
So, they're going to have to go into the portal. They're going to have to go get a guy because this just isn't going to work. And you know what, Eddie? If they do roll with Will Howard next year and they win 8 games, I will eat crow on this podcast gladly.
You hear it here, folks, on the Purple Project podcast. He said
it.
I'd
love to eat it.
Episode 73.
I would love to. You heard it right here. I would love to eat that crow. But I just can't see it right now. I just can't see it. And so that's it. I mean, they're going to have to figure it out. And Coach Klein's got to figure it out. Because if he goes 5-7, 6-6 next year, that's a problem. That's a problem. If he does that, and K-State has attendance numbers similar to what they had this year, he could find himself out of Manhattan. I'm going to be 100% honest. I think that might be enough to be able to pull the plug on him and say, say we can't do it. Like we can't do it. If they can't recruit better, if they still can't develop a guy, if there's not excitement around it, and people aren't showing up, and Cordy Messingham is still in that off, in that box, up in the press box, calling plays, that's gonna be hard to sell. It's gonna be a really hard sell for K-State fans, especially if K-State's struggling next year. And at some point, you know, K-State's gonna be getting into a precedent here by the end of the year.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yep, there it is. There it is.
Have a Gene. You don't. Yep. You know what type of pressure may they put on Gene? You have no idea. And so Gene's gonna be wanting to press the new boss. I'm just saying that's why I said at the top, I think it's in Chris Bonham's best interest to try to figure the offense thing out now. Because
you better figure out now.
The fans, it's not working with Messingham. The fans want him.
It's
and
not.
He keeps them around.
It's going to get worse.
And he was, Fire Messingham was trending on Twitter this weekend. Like, fans don't want him. I don't mean that to be mean, but.
Is it true? Is it true? What are you going to do?
He's not getting the job done, and the offense is struggling, and Chris Kleiman cannot afford that. He cannot afford next year with such a big season to do that. So if he brings Cordy Messingham back, that's fine, but he might be putting his neck on the chopping block. And I don't know if that's what he wants to do or not, but they need to figure the quarterback thing out. They need to figure the recruiting thing out. And there are just a ton of questions really about the long-term future of this football program going into this next year, which is going to be as critical as any for Coach Kleiman and this entire staff.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Or they'll just bring him back for another year and settle for mediocrity. And that's what fans, for one, obviously, are probably for why they're not getting excited when talking about football, because, you know, we can't get excited for who's going to take over Skylar Thompson next year. And, yeah, people ain't just going to get behind that. And that's just bad. That's just bad news for all the coaching staff, really. Yeah, nobody doesn't want Courtney Messingham to call the plays. That's how bad it's that's how bad it's getting. And, yes, it's almost the bottom of the hour here. It's 11:30 here, Central Time. It's been a good discussion on the podcast. So probably just going to wrap up here in a few more minutes here on the podcast. Eddie Greer, Alex A. and the Pro Project Podcast. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, you don't want to settle for mediocrity, 5-6, trying to barely make it into bowl games. You want to be relevant and somehow in the Big 12. Obviously, you take a game. I'm going to take Texas, Oklahoma out of the equation. And this is actually a perfect example with Baylor, Oklahoma State. They're playing in the title game on Saturday. They're having some good seasons, obviously. And really, all the new teams that are coming in here to the Big 12. BYU, Cincinnati's playing a big title game. Houston's playing their conference title game. UCF as well. So I don't think you're going to miss a beat there. But to compete in the new Revolve Big 12, you're going to have, again, it goes back to what we've both been saying. I've been saying it all year long. And hate to beat with a dead horse. But again, you have to have a quarterback in there. And yeah, I mean, you brought up some really good points, and we'll definitely continue to discuss that all the way through, obviously, the bowl game, obviously, but even afterwards, also, obviously. So yeah, they're gonna have to go to transfer portal, maybe not get one, but maybe two quarterbacks, possibly. I mean, I'll just throw that out there.
You're never gonna have too much depth, Eddie.
I'll throw that out there to let you guys think about that also. So you know how injuries can happen too. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, it's been disappointing, you know, not to see this coaching staff develop their guy. Yes, I mean, you can say, you know, Chris Kleiman and Scott Thompson, their relationship, it's been a good one ever since Chris Kleiman has arrived here in Manhattan. But that was Bill Snyder getting Skyle Thompson. So, I mean, Chris Kleiman had to turn him around, and he did that.
Yep.
So now these guys are struggling to find their next quarterback. So That's going to be one of the topics of discussion, obviously, but this has been one heck of an episode. Definitely a discussion to be continued. That is for sure. I wanted to check around the calendar real quick before Alex gives his final thoughts here. Alex mentioned volleyball. The volleyball team, despite getting swept by KU, in the year under 500 in conference play. Really, they were coming off of a good year last year. I was very, with the talent they had coming back. I mean, they still have Aaliyah Carter, who was a beast. They had kind of up and down year, but they still didn't make the NCAA tournament, which they're going to be playing Friday in their first round in Nebraska against Florida State, which is, their record was a 19-9. As I read it correctly there. So they're going to have a challenge in front of them as well. They better be ready to play there. So we'll see if K-State can get past Florida State. That's Friday. Also on Friday, now I kind of mentioned this already, women's basketball. Jeff Mennie taking on the number one team in the nation, South Carolina in Ayoka Lee, putting that double-double straight on the line there. Against them, so I'm definitely interested in that matchup there for them. We'll see what happens out of that. And then
number one in the country on the road.
Ooh,
get much better than that.
Yep, and then add the dessert with it. Sunday, men's basketball. Bruce Weber fired up. He's fired. He was fired up.
He was fired up after the game.
He was fired up.
If you're not scared of COVID, Eddie, he wants you in Wichita.
Yep, he wants you there. Wildcat Nation. He wants y'all there supporting the Cats.
He called you out today, everybody.
Pretty much. He pretty much called everybody out saying, Purple Nation, show up to Wichita as K-State, Wichita State finally meet on the basketball court, 5 o'clock Central Time. Oh, boy. It goes back to excitement. Bruce Weber excited for this game. And he should be. He's the head coach. He's supposed to be excited. So I have no problem with that.
I like it. I like seeing some excitement from the head coach.
That's something.
I want to see some juice from him.
That's something.
Mean, earlier in the week, we heard the story about him saying that he played the video of like the shoes and I don't know, something with the white shoes. Something his grandson watches. I watched the cartoon and video and I thought, oh my gosh, how the heck can you show that to a Division I Power 5 college basketball program? I can't believe it. But he did. He did. Okay, cool. He goes from that to now he's calling out the fans on TV. Bruce is having a week, Eddie. Bruce is having a week. He's got some juice this week. He's pulling out some doozies. He's quoting Maximus Edwards over like, we don't play together. No, we don't play for each other. No, what? Oh my gosh! Now I'm blanking on it. Oh my gosh!
You're messing it up.
I'm messing it up. But point being is, Maximus Edwards had some quote. Bruce keeps talking about it this week. Bruce keeps talking about playing for Swagger. Bruce is talking about this white, you know, his grandson's video about the kid in the white shoes and how he ruins the white shoes, but he keeps his swagger and he shows the video to him. Now he's calling the fans out. Bruce is having the week, Eddie. Bruce is having the week. Show Twitch talk.
Hopefully he can bring that energy to interest Big down there.
Hopefully his team's got that his energy.
Yep.
That's what I hope.
Yep, K-State, Wichita State, and that will be a stepping stone to get this fan base somewhat excited. See what I'm doing there. If they can go down there, beat a very good Wichita State team down there.
They beat Oklahoma State by 9 in Stillwater today.
Oh, yeah, so.
They did.
It's not going to be easy going down there. But Bruce Weber and company, Nigel Pack, those guys, they better be ready to bring it against Wichita State Sunday. That is going to be a good game as well. So a lot of good stuff in Manhattan. Again, got to get excited about that. I don't know. At least in the first week of December, I don't know what it is because we got some interesting stuff. Action going on in volleyball, the basketball, and of course football. On that same day, we will find out the bowl game and the opponent and destination where the Wildcats on the football side we'll be going to, and there's going to be plenty of discussion about that. Alex, any last thoughts?
You know, you mentioned basketball. I just want to say it is going to be a big week because you talk about it. And look, I have no idea, Eddie, what our conversation will look like this time next week. Because when we talk this time next week, K-State will have played Wichita State and Marquette.
Yep, that's right. That's right.
I don't know if we're going to be looking at it being like, oh, how about those Wildcats? We're going to be like, oh, God. Like, what are we going to do? I have no idea. All I know is Marquette's like 6-1. Wichita State's like 7-1. Maybe they're both 7-1. I don't know. But they're both something and one. And good records. Good records. Good team. K-State, Eddie, they cannot lose both those games. I looked at their schedule. I figured out what they can do, in my opinion, Eddie. I think K-State can go 9. I think they're fine if they go 9-3. If they go 9-3 before Big 12 play begins, they're 4-2 right now. If they go 9-3, 75-1 in the last 6, I think that they're fine. That lets them drop one. They can drop between Wichita State, Marquette, Nebraska, and there is another one. Maybe there wasn't. Maybe it's just those three. They can drop one. That's it. You can drop one, and that is it. And they need to be 9-3. I think that they need to be 9-3 for K-State fans to be feeling good about them going into Big 12 play. And for the resume, if they want to be an NCAA tournament contender, they need wins, non-con wins. So they need to start racking them up. And what better way to start against Wichita State? And Bruce Weber said it. This is a game we scheduled for fans. We scheduled this game for the fans. And so if K-State can go down to Wichita and get a win against Wichita State, that would be huge for them. I really, really think that would be big, big, big for them. Someone said, pick between Wichita State or Marquette. Which one do you want them to win? Wichita State in a heartbeat.
Wichita State, definitely.
That game, I believe, could really be a spark for them, really could be kind of a launching pad for them. So that's final thought. And then I just want to give kudos. You mentioned Nigel McAtee. I just want to give kudos to him. He's having a great year. Very quietly, he's having a great beginning to this season. He has scored in double digits in every single game this year. And he is scoring 14 a game, 15 a game, 16 a game, 13 a game, 17 a game, 16 a game. I mean, it's so consistent what he is doing. He's really kind of a stabilizing force for the Cats. And he's been so consistent in his play. And he hasn't necessarily just gotten hot, just like blown up in a game. But he's where he needs to be, when he needs to be there. He's shooting 45% from three, 51% from the field. He's just having a very, very good, consistent year for the Cavs. I really like to see it. And that's encouraging. That's encouraging to me to see the way Nigel's playing. And so I'm just excited once Davion can get over his pneumonia to see him get back in action and what those two can start to do. It looks like the guys are starting to get a little more comfortable. Those transfers. Mark Smith
had a big game tonight.
Mark Smith had a big game. He finally showed some of the deep three range that he's got. Hit a couple big threes. He had a really nice pullback dunk. So he had some moments, and they still need to get Masood playing, going, and they still need to get Noel going, but those guys are so flashy. They just need to get it together. The K-State, they got a lot more depth. They just need to put it together. And look, I get what Maximus Edwards was saying. They've got a lot of talent there offensively, a lot more than they've had in years past, but they just haven't put it together yet.
Yep, that's what I've been saying.
It's just kind of discombobulated. It's not gelling yet. So they just need it to gel. Hopefully they can get it gelling against Wichita State. But really like what I've seen from Nigel Paxton. I really do. I really think that he is doing some really good things for the Cavs. I just want to give him some credit because I've heard his name thrown out there a ton. And I think he deserves kudos. So those are my final thoughts, Eddie. And hopefully K-State can get a win over Wichita State. And hopefully they can do it quickly and doesn't go to overtime. So I think K-State played like 15 minutes after that. Not K-State. I think the Chiefs play like 15 minutes after that game to boost it in. So hopefully it's a brisk interruption time. And I can just move on to the next one. And I'll be, everybody wins and I have a good Sunday. but I'm excited for it, no doubt.
Yep, we're all excited about that as well. The Purple Project Podcast episode 73 in the books here. A lot of stuff going on in K-State Athletics here in Manhattan, Kansas. Subscribe to the Purple Project Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. That's going to do it for us for this week. And we'll be back next week, maybe twice. We'll see how everything goes from there. But for right now, we're going to put a pin on this episode for right now. For Alex Aiden, this is Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. This is the Purple. You're not listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Go Cats. We'll see what happens this weekend. Should be a good one, guys.
Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.